It's time to awaken your inner traveler and zip around the world as money is sent to the people who rely on it. This is Money Travels, presented by Visa. I'm Indre Viscontis. Linda Chu is a 19-year-old sophomore at Columbia University who moved to the U.S. when she was 10. But she still stays in close contact with friends and family back in China using an app called WeChat.
WeChat is such an all-consuming app that, like, when I'm in China, the app that I use the most is WeChat. When I pay, I pull the app up, show them my pay code, or I scan their pay code, and money comes out of my account and money goes into theirs. It's been so long since I went back, and I still have some paper money with me from 4 years ago. I was asking my friends, is it actually going to be of any use? None of them didn't say, it's kind of useless. It's just a useless pile of paper. Like, very nicely though, but they were basically saying, nobody's really going to take that. So I don't carry around wallets when I'm in China. I don't really need anything except for my portable charger and my phone. It's so convenient.
Welcome to Money Travels, presented by Visa. On this podcast, we follow the money as it zips around the world, enabling our fellow humans to survive and thrive. And we talk to the experts who are building the tools that will transform the next generation of money movement. Tencent is a multinational technology conglomerate and one of the world's largest social media companies. WeChat is its popular instant messaging app, but as Linda mentioned, it's much more than that. Inside mainland China, Weixin is a payment app that contains the digital wallet Weixin Pay. So WeChat and Weixin are two distinct sister services operated by different entities under the Tencent group, but they're interoperable so that, for instance, WeChat users and Weixin users around the world can communicate directly with one another, including exchanging money. But WeChat and Weixin are subject to different laws and terms of service, so it gets complicated fast. You can think of Weixin as primarily serving people within China, and WeChat, it allows people outside of China to stay connected and travel seamlessly back and forth. In this episode, we're going to explore the ways that Weixin has integrated financial features into the consumer app experience and how Visa Direct is helping Weixin Pay create a seamless digital experience for users who can receive remittances directly into their wallet. We're going to talk to Deepan Dagor, Vice President and Regional Head Asia Pacific at Visa Direct, and Wen Hui Yang. He's the Regional General Manager of TenPay Global Asia Pacific. But first, let's get back to Linda and her experience using WeChat.
So my parents grew up in the countryside of Hunan. Their ancestry pretty much goes as far back as it can be. My mom's side and my dad's side both have huge family WeChat groups. A lot of people from China only use WeChat. And if I'm talking to Chinese people from different countries, we would default to talking in WeChat. Moments when WeChat is like an amalgamation of all of the very like American social media app spaces that you can think of. I've seen people posting about their travels. I've seen people post just pictures. I've seen people only post words, all sorts of kind of messages. I've read a lot of articles that get reposted there. So Moments is an important space for me to catch up with what my friends and acquaintances are doing, but also to see, you know, what people are reading. It's an important part of my life, but it's also a very particular yet not clearly non-definable space, because now that I'm thinking about it, I do have contacts of people from all sorts of places on my WeChat, but WeChat has always been very Chinese oriented, like people who are from China, people who are very interested in China, people who communicate in Chinese, like Mandarin, Cantonese, whatever. So then to me, to a certain extent, you could say that WeChat represents a certain population of people, a part of the world, maybe not geographically, but, you know, you could say like ideologically.
I find it pretty remarkable how Tencent services have become a feature of life for many Chinese people. From the user's perspective, you just need the one app to arrange a night to go out with friends, split the dinner check, and then share the experience with others. While many of the financial services apps in North America, for example, are often standalone products, Weixin and WeChat have blended the personal and business side of social interactions into what feels like a seamless experience. But what's going on under the hood? And how did we get here? Wenhui Yang is the regional general manager of Tenpei Global, Asia Pacific, and he has extensive experience in business development, particularly for both domestic and cross-border money movement solutions. He's going to tell us how Weixin and WeChat have built this interoperability and created a set of apps that are so sticky that many users use them multiple times a day for many different types of transactions. So Wenhui, tell us, what are the origins of Weixin? Where did it come from?
Basically, Tencent is a tech giant company coming from China. We started from a social media app, and then later on we moved into different areas. And one of the fairly well-known and widely used product is called Weixin. Right? Weixin is actually the leading social media app in China, of course, but it's probably one of the most favorited social media app in the world as well.
Where did the payment part of it come in?
Well, Weixin app itself has a wide range of service and products provided. It's deeply integrated into people's day-to-day. And when we are talking about the day-to-day, then of course payment is inevitable, right? Because we need to chat with our friends, and we also need to make all sorts of payments on every day. So everywhere you go, whether you go to the offline shopping, or you go to the small shops, you pay. Or whether you go online booking, order the food, even call a taxi, etc., you always pay. And one of the functions fairly popular is also sending the monies among each other.
Yeah, so was there an issue of trust? I mean, I certainly, you know, in the U.S., if I'm using my social media app, I wouldn't immediately think that it was also trustworthy to send money through it. Was that an issue in the development here, or is it just culturally a different use?
I think in general, it has always been an issue for people, you know, to trust a new stuff, especially when it's going around with your money. It took us quite a while to establish the trust, but eventually, as we are having billions of users right now, and it becomes your day-to-day, then the trust being stronger and stronger. And this kind of trust help us to extend our service into the cross-border area.
Is the cross-border part of the business also growing? Is it, you know, how does it compare? And, you know, who is it that uses these cross-border features?
As we discussed at the beginning, actually we started this with domestic. So we only moved into the cross-border at a later date. Because first of all, we want to make sure we'll be able to serve the domestic population well enough. And also we accumulate more experience on different perspectives, on the technologies, on the securities, on the overall systems, and also user experience. It has been done well, right? And we are, I would say we are one of the most trusted brand on this particular area in China. And from there, we see potentially we would be able to serve a bigger population to address their needs. If we talk about the cross-border remittance as a particular feature we are doing, of course, we are providing a couple of products and services. The cross-border money movement or the remittance is one of the things we are doing. So we started from helping the people in Hong Kong to send money back to Philippines and to Indonesia. And most of them are immigrant workers. Why we want to do so? Because we see a tangible needs. Actually, it's kind of urgent needs to be addressed. Is there quite a lot of immigrant workers? They work abroad and they want to send the money back to support their families. Of course, there were already existing channels there, but the efficiency can be improved. When we talk to some of the end users, we understand they only probably have one day off a week, but then they may have to queue a couple of hours just in order to send the money back. So we thought, hey, then probably our technology would be able to play a role. Our expertise and experience can also play a role. This is how we started our cross-border remittance. Then, of course, this takes time because we need to make sure while we are fully compliant in domestic China, we want to make sure we are also fully compliant in every market we are operating. This is also why we move into a business model to cooperate with all those licensed remittance house or remittance partners in different markets, and also with the established institutions like Visa, right, which gives us a much wider coverage into different markets.
So is that essentially what Visa Direct added to the capabilities, sort of being able to grow the network? Or are there other ways that the Visa Direct partnership has borne fruit?
Well, of course, there are a couple of things. First of all, when we started the cross-border remittance, actually we started with all those fintech companies because we are naturally closer, particularly on the mobile payment technologies. And then we leveraging all those partnerships, we have developed fairly strong and good and welcomed service on the cross-border remittance. But at this point of time, mainly we are serving all those overseas Chinese working, living abroad, and they'd like to support their families at domestic China. The product and service has been rolled out for years, and the response from the user perspective is fairly positive. From compliance perspective, we also see very robust record. So it built a very strong confidence in ourselves. Then we have other partnerships with Visa in the past. Then it come to both ends to think about, hey, why don't we put our hands together? So this is how the partnership between us and Visa Direct started. With Visa Direct coming into picture, of course, first of all, the network is much wider and the Visa Direct will be able to help us to better serve all those banks. This is where Visa connects thousands of banks across the whole world. The other end, of course, Visa with their technologies and experience, they have built a very strong system and also the procedures, et cetera, et cetera. And certainly we see this is another good value Visa brings to this partnership. On the other hand, we also have a lot of expertise and experience about the China market and also about the mobile payment technologies. I think this is also something mutually appreciated on both sides.
Yeah, I was going to ask how Visa Direct benefits from this partnership, but are there any other ways that you think that what Tencent and Weixin bring to the table is unique for Visa Direct?
So China is ranked as a top three, I think number three, if not number two in terms of global receivable from the remittance side. So while we are Weixin Pay, right, we are penetrating almost 100% of the population. So that gives a very good coverage or channel for Visa to be able to bring the two systems, huge systems together. The other one, the whole Asia, including China, is one of the leading area on the mobile payment side. We understand that the financial transaction has to be secure, has to be fully compliant. We can make it as warm as it could be. And we are one of the leading pioneers on these areas. And apparently the domestic market receives it quite well. And when we do our cross-border remittance, when we introduce one of the feature called the share links, the share link feature is also very well appreciated by the end users. So that shows the value of the social media. And I think this is also something interesting for both Visa Direct and us to explore together.
To get a better sense of the role that Visa Direct plays in this partnership, let's talk to Deepan Dagur. He's the Vice President and Regional Head for Asia Pacific for Visa Direct. Deepan, welcome back to Money Travels.
Thank you, Andrea.
I imagine then there's a lot of competition for people to get accepted by, you know, Tencent or WeChat. How did Visa win that competition? How is it that Tencent knew that Visa Direct was going to be the right partnership for them?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, the partnership that Visa has with Tencent in money movement is really one of collaboration that is built on a philosophy of, you know, what I call network of networks. On the one hand, you have Tencent that's obviously growing the functionality and capabilities that they're offering their customers with their WeChat Pay wallets. At Visa, we have built this money movement network where we're helping over 1,000 banks, fintechs, FIs, remitters around the world with money movement, whether that's cross-border, domestic, and in the cross-border space, helping them move money to over 8.5 billion endpoints now with the WeChat Tencent partnership. To accounts as endpoints, to card credentials as endpoints, and now to digital wallets as endpoints. So it's a very complementary capability set that we were able to bring together to serve Visa's originating FIs and fintechs and remitters on the one hand in cross-border money movement, and also with Tencent on the other hand, helping their customers receive that money into WeChat wallets through Weixin Pay.
What are the challenges that Weixin faced and then solved with Visa Direct as a partner that now makes it easier for people outside of China to send money to their loved ones inside the country?
to answer this question, sometimes it's useful just to take a individual use case. Imagine a Chinese national living in the UK or Canada or the US wishing to send money home to a loved one in China. And how that would have happened in the past or through a more conventional way would have been a bank remittance, a telegraphic transfer. You know, they call up their family member, they find out the account number, the bank address, the bunch of other details to help make that transaction. But in the case of what we have on send to wallet, we're now enabling that bank or FI and the customer that they serve to send money to a Weixin or a WeChat Pay handle. So the user experience is a lot simpler. People understand it very intuitively. It's information that the receiver has on hand and is able to share with their sender very easily. So this is really, I think, a P2P transfer is a P2P transfer. It's just technically how it's done domestically and cross-border is, of course, technically different. But what we're seeing here is basically what I'd call localization. Taking a habit that has been created for a domestic P2P transfer and essentially layering that on top of a cross-border remittance.
Let's say I'm starting a business outside of China and I want to get in on that market. Is the right step for me to approach Visa Direct and say, hey, can you help me build this particular capability so that we can seamlessly then partner with Tencent? Or is there some other route by which businesses might get in on this collaboration?
We serve banks, fintechs, remitters. And those banks, fintechs, remitters serve end customers, be it individuals, be it small businesses, in sending money overseas or receiving money from overseas. And there are benefits of what we're able to provide those banks and fintechs. We could talk about speed, cost effectiveness, endpoint reach, and now the ability to send money to digital wallets overseas. And Tencent, WeChat Pay, Weixin are material enhancement to that digital wallet network that we have globally. So it's a phenomenal opportunity for a small business in the use case that you've talked about to approach their relationship bank, fintech, remitter on how they can access those increased endpoints. And of course, if any of those partner with Visa Direct, we'll be able to provide them with that access.
So when you have one of these massive apps that has so many different customers that you use for so many different aspects of your life, I can imagine that it can become a little impersonal. And yet there are a number of things that WeChat and Weixin have done to make it feel as if it is more individualized, that it is more culturally kind of, you know, in line with what people would do when they interact with one another. So do you think that this is a successful strategy? Does it work for you? Like, what's been your own kind of interaction with this aspect Sure. of the apps?
Sending money to a loved one overseas or receiving money from a loved one is often a very deeply personal activity. It's not purely a transaction. I mean, there are emotions and relationships that are bundled together with that. And anything that we can do to sort of enhance that user experience, I believe it is welcome, right? I mean, we talk about cost, simplicity, speed, security, which of course is of paramount importance, but so is the user experience. And anything that makes that user experience something that they can connect with as part of that cross-border remittance, whether it's a parent sending money to a child in university overseas, or it's a Chinese national living overseas just wanting to send money home to their family, I think is absolutely welcomed and just provides this emotional connection to that transaction and what it represents in supporting those families.
One of the standout features of the remittance experience in WeChat and Weixin is the red packet. You might be familiar with the red envelopes that get exchanged for occasions like marking Lunar New Year. Traditionally, they hold cash. But in a cashless system, how do you replicate the charm of the red packet? That's where Tencent has created a digital version of a red envelope.
So on WeChat, if you want to send money like directly to another person, you can either transfer, so 转账, or you can send them 红包, which is the red pocket. So then it becomes a game in group chats when holidays roll around, or especially now that Lunar New Year is coming up. I'm sure those like red pocket games are going to explode across many, many different family group chats, friend group chats, etc. Basically, you just put out one red pocket after the other in a group chat setting. If I was the one putting out the red pocket, I would get to choose like how much money I put in it, like $100 to 10 people. And everybody who's, you know, in the chat would be trying their like fastest to, you know, click on that red pocket. And afterwards, there would be like an interface jumping out. And then it'd say probably somewhere along the lines of, congrats, you got $3. And then I think it's customary that everybody sends red pockets, which is like the 接龙 part, so that everybody contributes some money, but then everybody also, you know, gets something out of it. The money you get is not the point of the game, but the fun of it is more like communal, that, ha, I got $1 more than you. Or like, ha, I actually, like, you didn't even get any money. You know, like those kind of like friendly bragging rights. It really becomes more of a game, and I almost like it better because I think that's what red pockets were supposed to be. Usually it's given by adults to children. And then there was like, oh my god, in person, there's a whole culture of, okay, like you should accept it right away, right? You should, oh no, 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 that's too nice of you. But then like eventually you take it. But like the art of like pushing and pulling, it's so much fun. The amount being small almost makes it more fun, because at that point then it's less about the money and more about the symbolic meaning it represents, right? It's a token of goodwill. And it breaks down the power dynamic that you usually associate with the giver and the receiver of red pockets. It's really nice.
Here's Wenhui again to talk about Tencent's role in this cultural evolution. How has this changed kind of the behavior around money, giving like from person to person? I imagine that, you know, when grandma gives you a red packet or a red envelope, there's something really kind of touching and special about that. And now if it comes in digital form, what are the differences that you're seeing in terms of the shift in how people are sending these packets?
For some special occasions, I probably will still want to pass some cash in a physical red packet. It's kind of like a tradition. But on the other hand, we also understand that people are moving around. The country is big. You may not be able to visit everyone physically, but you may still want to show a bit of your respect. And also, as I mentioned, when you move this into a digital format, you have other features to be embedded. The personalized wording is one thing. You will also be able to plug in a photo, right, and plug in a video, right? So that shows a very different feeling to different people. And for the younger generations, they also feel that the digital format is more convenient in a way, because the moment when they receive it, then they can immediately load it into their digital wallet. Then they will be able to use the digital wallet in different formats. For digital payment, of course, they may also want to go to their financial services, which makes it much easier. Rather than you receive the cash, then you're going to go to the banks and then you have to deposit the cash, et cetera, et cetera. So it takes even longer time.
Is there a tension, though, between the seriousness of money movement that requires security and risk mitigation, et cetera, and then this kind of, not gamification, but the more fun social side of it? I mean, are there elements that you maintain in the way that money moves that give people the confidence that their money is secure and doesn't feel like it's all just fun?
Great question. Indeed, this is fundamental. Right. So while we are talking about, as you mentioned, the gamification or social media elements, et cetera, et cetera. But fundamentally, this is still a financial transaction, which means the convenience, but also security, anti-money laundering, et cetera, et cetera. Those things has to be fulfilled. All right. Before we can talk about all those exciting features. And this is also why the Tencent FinTech team has been established. So from the day when we decided to move into this area, we already understand we have to be fully compliant with all the regulations in the markets we are operating, and the security of the transactions and the trust is built based on the security features you would be able to provide to the people. Of course, people like all those exciting features to be connected with others, but fundamentally it's touching people's money. So security is still the first thing, and people don't want to play with their money, but they just want to have some fun while they are still doing those basic financial transactions.
Are there any stats that you could share with us? Can you throw some numbers our way?
So yeah, if we talk about the WeChat and WeChat and the WeChat user in total, then we are talking about a billion of users globally. And we are talking about transactions. And yes, we are processing billion of transactions daily. And we are linking with thousands of financial institutions worldwide with more than 4 million merchants overseas, so that we'll be able to help the WeChat Pay users to pay outside of mainland China via the QR code. And then they will pay in the domestic currency, which is RMB, while the merchant will receive the money in the local currency, which makes much easier for the merchants in local. So those are some of the big numbers talking about the overall. And on the other hand, we have actually also enabled the whole WeChat Pay QR code network in China for the international users. So as you mentioned at the beginning, if you travel to China, one of the things you may think about is, hey, how can I pay? If that particular market is moving so fast on the digital payment side, so how about for the foreigners? So this is actually one of the things well embedded into our mind as well. Back to as early as in 2019, we have already started the pilot to enable a small group of merchants, but quite critical for the overseas users or cross-border travelers, to help them to be able to bind the international credit card like Visa card, right? You have to bind it into your WeChat app or WeChat app, then you'll be able to scan and pay as a local. So the pilot went quite well. Of course, it took a few years to polish the features, etc., etc. So eventually by middle of last year, July 2023, yes, I think there's an official announcement saying that now the Tencent or WeChat Pay enabled the tens of millions of merchants. So basically it's the whole QR code network in China to support all the international travelers. Once you bind your international credit card into the WeChat app.
For those of us more accustomed to relying on different apps for social media, family connections, and payment exchange, it's hard to imagine what it's like to have a single app that serves so many different purposes. And I marvel at the success of Tencent in orchestrating a sticky experience that has become so popular across China and throughout the world. Sometimes it's hard to fathom the scale of these interactions. So to bring us back to the individual experience, here's Linda again.
My WeChat name is Dongfang, which is my Chinese name. And like to me, that's where, you know, I express my Chinese identity or I get in touch with my Chinese identity. Like, of course, it's at this point, it's very much like interwoven with, you know, the Chinese people I've met in America or even Americans who I've met in China who, you know, use WeChat for various different reasons. It used to be a very sharp duality in my life. But now that I'm going to Colombia, now that I've met a lot of Chinese people from mainland or like, you know, Chinese people who grew up here and speak and use Chinese, the identities are starting to mix. Like I'm starting to use WeChat, I feel like, for Linda's purposes, not just Dongfang's purposes, you know, and I'm starting to use other social media apps that normally I grouped under Linda for Dongfang's purposes. So now there is a very interesting mix and entanglement between these two names that, you know, maybe I will finally figure out what it's like to, you know, live as Linda and Dongfang at the same time instead of having to turn to one and turn away from the other simultaneously.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Money Travels. And thanks to our guests, Wenhui Yang, Deepan Dagur, and Linda Chu. If you've enjoyed this episode, leave us a review so that other people can find it. And follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, I'm Indre Viscontis, and this has been Money Travels, presented by Visa.